Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Drive Pink Dialogue. This is episode number 11. We're talking about yesterday's 3-2 loss to Montreal. As always, I'm your host, Scotty, and I'm here with my co-host, Soar. How are you feeling today, man?
Not great. The undefeated season is over. A little bit saddened. The weekend was dampened by this result, but you know what? We move.
Yeah, I think that's the worst part about being on Sunday night and being the last game where there's no West Coast games. There's nothing to get your mind off of it. You just have to stew in the frustration. Give me your top line thoughts before we talk about some roster moves.
I think top line thoughts were it was a frustrating game because it was there for the taking. I think Inter Miami did enough to at least deserve a point and maybe should have even done enough to get all three. And I think this is going to be one of those games where we're going to look back and be like, you know what, Montreal wasn't that great. We were the better team for a majority of this game, and we should have got the 3 points out of this, even with the lineup that we had put up. So I think it's just going to be one of those lost opportunity sort of a game, but I just want to put it behind us as soon as possible.
Well, before we get into it, let's talk about the roster real quick, because there are a few roster-related notes that we should touch on before we got into the game. You know, we mentioned it a little bit in the pregame show that we heard about Marcelo Wiegandt. There's some other names at right back. We had heard that Matias Rojas was close to signing with Inter Miami. How are you feeling about this, you know, the team, the roster right now? Do you think we need additions? And more importantly, it seems like Chris Henderson and Tata know they need a right back. We've been connected to three over the last couple of days. It feels like they know it's a need and they're working on making it happen. But where are you with that?
In an ideal world, I would sign three more players. One would be a right back, obviously, to replace Yedlin. One would be a good young center back to maybe replace someone like a Kristoff. And then another would potentially be a right winger who's a little more dynamic and pacey and who can take players on, because that's a profile that I think is missing in this team. And having such a player of the mold of Matias Rojas, perhaps, would give us the chance to take defenders one-on-one and beat somebody when Messi is not on the pitch. Because I feel like when Messi is not there, then we don't essentially have someone on the right side of the pitch to do that. And a lot of responsibility falls on Robert Taylor. So those would be the three positions that I would prioritize in an ideal world. But I think by the looks of it, we're probably going to get a right back and a right wing or an attacking midfielder, which would be okay, but not great.
I'll be honest, I thought for sure you were going to say the third player was Yannick Bright, because we're both waiting for that signing. But
in my mind, he already plays for Inter Miami. I'm just waiting for him to be officially announced on the roster. But that's, for me, is a done deal. They shouldn't think too much about it, but we'll see.
Yeah. To me, the top line takeaway from all of this is that they know they need a right back. And I think they've known they need a right back before the last two games. They've been trying to get one. They're looking for one. All three are playing in Argentina right now that they've been connected to. So that's clearly, you know, the theme of their roster building this offseason. But as fans, we're really frustrated. We see this 3-5-2 and we want better results. We want this structure that has had success already this season. And it's clear Tata doesn't feel like he has the players that he needs on this roster to be able to play that 4-3-3. And the team is trying to rectify that.
Yeah, that's always a good sign. But at least the management knows what players we need.
Yeah, and as far as the right winger, I mean, I hear what you're saying. Obviously, losing Lionel Messi out of your starting lineup is going to be a significant drop-off. But I think it's the right back that is actually holding us back from playing a 4-3-3 and having someone like Julian Gressel, or, you know, I think eventually Benjamin Kramaski will be able to play up there. And so I think that we'll be okay without Lionel Messi moving forward if it's not in this 3-5-2 that we're not very good at. But anyways, let's talk about the game. Obviously, we lost, but before the game, we got the lineup and we saw that it was significant rotation. Freire, Diego Gomez, Lionel Messi, Sergio Busquets, and Luis Suarez all got the game off. What were your thoughts on the lineup? What were your thoughts on, you know, going into the game, what were you expecting from this team?
We spoke about this in our preview podcast, and we talked about the need for rotation. So I wasn't surprised that there was so much rotation and a lot of the second string team getting a run out. I think that was necessary, especially given the immense game coming up midweek. I was surprised that David Ruiz was selected to play the right wing back position. And honestly, with the benefit of hindsight, I don't think he had that great of a game. He wasn't terrible in that position, but I feel like that was a side that I would have been, I would point out and say, perhaps we could have had somebody else play in that position, maybe even Gressel and David Ruiz switch up. So that was definitely it. I think Lawson Sunderland didn't have a terrible game again. I think he had a decent enough game. He was involved, looked good. But I think after the game, especially, and again, with the benefit of hindsight, I would say this second string team is still good enough to beat a team like Montreal. I think there's definitely depth in this team. There was a lot of promise shown by a lot of these players, some of whom have had their first start of the season. They're playing in positions that they're not entirely comfortable with. Robert Taylor, I think, did well in the striker position, apart from the fact that he didn't finish most of his chances. But he was there. He was making the play. So I think it was a game of fine margins. And if those fine margins had fallen in our favor, we would be having a completely different discussion about how good this roster actually is. So a lot of positives to take back. Definitely disheartening to not get the 3 points or even a point. But I think there's promise in this roster. And there's something brewing and there's something building. So,
yeah, going back to David Ruiz, and you know, we'll talk about individual performances later. But the first thing that I was reminded of, and I'll bring this up a couple times, is going back to last year in the beginning of the season, pre-Messi, pre-Tata, pre-this new Inter-Miami, there was room for a young player to come in and just fit a profile but not stand out. And I think that's what we saw with David Ruiz, where we saw a guy who could, you know, has the athletic profile and maybe the talent to play right back, but he needs, or right wing back, but he needs, you know, he needs 20 games there to really feel comfortable. And it doesn't feel like this is a team where he's going to be able to get that opportunity, because this is a team that wants to win every single game. Anything else from the lineup? I mean, you mentioned Lawson Sunderland. Julian Gressel played in the midfield over David Ruiz, who I thought maybe we would see there. I thought maybe that was a switch we might get in the second half, where the two players sort of swapped roles, but we didn't. Anything else like that you circled going into the game where you thought this could be a problem?
Not really. I think I had some structural concerns, obviously, about the 3-5-2, like every other fan right now. Yeah. We're going to talk about it, but we grew into the game. But overall, I was just happy that there was rotation and a lot of these players got a chance to get some minutes under their legs.
Okay, well, let's get into it. Talk about some of the big moments to sort of set the stage for the rest of the episode. The first real big one that I wanted to point out was sort of a ball over the top in the 12th minute that Drake Callender comes out to try and head away, and it sort of scrapes the top of his head and goes right over it. And Matias Cocaro sort of gets to the ball in the box. Sergei Kristoff chases him down and has a tremendous one-on-one defensive moment to block the shot and not let that very good goal-scoring opportunity turn into a goal for Montreal. Any comments on that one?
I gave a visible gasp when that moment happened, because I was like, what the hell is Drake Callender doing here? And it seemed like we got back the Drake Callender from the preseason. Brilliant recovery by Kristoff. Well done. But we conceded a minute later, so it didn't really matter from that corner as well.
It was a great, great feeling for about 45 seconds. And then on the preceding corner, or rather ensuing corner, Fernando Alvarez scores a header from the corner. My only thing from this was that this is completely on Toto Aviles. He sort of gets bodied off and he doesn't get a good jump off. He doesn't make it hard for Alvarez to get a good header on the ball. And it's sort of, I mean, that's really all it was.
Yeah, he just switched off. He was on the wrong side of his man, allowed the player to get on the other side of him. And he was just playing catch up throughout it. I think I circled Aviles as well. Maybe Redondo could have done better in terms of understanding where the ball was going to be and maybe cover for Aviles, but poor marking, poor set piece defending, and just rudimentary errors.
Yeah, we've blocked off some time just to talk about the set piece issues. But moving forward in the first half, Jordi Alba scores a goal in the 22nd minute from a great pass from Campana, but it gets called for offsides. About 15 minutes later, Federico Redondo has a chip pass that Robert Taylor sort of bodies off a defender and gets a sort of clear line on goal and fires on the first touch. And it would have been on his highlight reel, although probably not number one. But it's the sort of amazing goal that we've seen Robert Taylor score before. I certainly lost my breath for a second thinking that was gonna go in. Any thoughts on that one?
No, I think that was a great ball from Redondo. I feel like Taylor could have maybe run into it a little bit more. He had some space. There was definitely gap in that. There was a gap that he could have exploited on that play. But that was a good shot, unfortunately wide. But that was the first sign of when you get Robert Taylor on the ball, he will make things happen. And I think that kind of switched the momentum in favor of Miami that particular moment.
Yeah, just knowing his history and some of the goals he scored for us, I don't blame him for taking that shot. And I was excited for half a second there. He had another chance a few minutes later. Julian Gressel plays in a really good ball for him, and he gets it in the box and tries to chip it over the keeper, and he just can't get it to drop before the crossbar sort of knocks it up and away. And then he has another chance right before the end of the half where it's a cross in from Toto Aviles, and he heads it, but it's right at the keeper. And so Inter Miami goes into halftime scoreless. Any top line thoughts on the first half? I mean, Inter Miami's losing 1-0, but it doesn't feel like they're really in bad shape in this game or losing even.
It was a bit eerie for me watching that first half, because I remember in the preview show, we talked about how the game's going to go. And we literally said Montreal's going to score first because Miami's going to be uncomfortable in the first few minutes of this game for at least 20 minutes. One of our listeners actually commented that Montreal's going to score at the 12th minute, and that's exactly what happened. But I think after Montreal scored, they kind of sat off and allowed Inter Miami to dictate the play and get comfortable. And we grew into that 3-5-2. We should have scored at least two goals in that particular in that run of play. I think after Montreal scored that goal, Miami did really well to gather themselves and get back into the game. And we finished the second half. We finished the first half definitely on top.
Moving into the second half, it was a little bit slower pace. Really, I didn't think there was anything worth noting until about the 69th minute. That's when a ball gets played into David Ruiz, and he gets sort of touched or checked at the edge of the 18-yard box, goes down. They didn't call it a foul, and so they didn't call it a penalty. I thought that was questionable. I think it easily could have been a penalty, but we didn't get enough replays to see whether it was inside the box or not, so maybe it was just outside the box. But about 2 minutes later, Inter Miami does score. It's right off a corner. The ball sort of gets flushed around to Lawson Sunderland, who puts it back to Taylor, who's wide. Then Sunderland makes a nice run. Robert Taylor finds him sort of near the touchline, and he puts it across to Leo Campana, who heads it in, and Miami has tied the game. How are you feeling at this point?
Vindicated, because I said it's going to be a Campana header. And exactly what happened. So I was definitely vindicated. Great ball by Lawson Sunderland. He was taking up some good positions. Campana, great header, composed header. Couldn't have asked for more. Great reaction.
Yeah. And I felt at this point like we were just going to win. Like it felt like we were playing better. We were creating better opportunities. Robert Taylor had a bunch. And it just felt like this was going to be our day at this point. And so to see Inter Miami do what happened over the next 7 minutes was really, really frustrating. Montreal retakes the lead in the 75th minute. It's off another set piece, and it was off the head of Matias Kokoro. It looks like Kokoro was offsides based on how his man was guarding him, but David Ruiz is sort of at the top of the line, keeping him onside. Drake Callender also comes forward and doesn't get there, so not a great play from from Drake Callender, and sort of a tough look for David Ruiz, who kept him onside in the first place. His two defenders both clearly thought he was offsides and were surprised to see that it wasn't called that way. Any thoughts on this? And again, we'll have a larger set piece discussion in a few minutes.
Yeah, another case of miscommunication. I think I don't know what David Ruiz was doing, because clearly Miami was trying to play the offside trap there. He didn't need to follow his runner because the ball wasn't coming to the person he was marking. So an issue there, but I would blame that goal more so on Drake Callender, because if you're coming out of that box, you have to win the ball, and he did not. So yeah, it was really, really hard conceding immediately after scoring, because I think the momentum kind of, it flattened us out.
Yeah, a lot of things about this game reminded me of last year's Inter-Miami, and giving up a goal almost immediately after scoring was definitely one of them. And it gets even worse a few minutes later. They get sort of a break. The ball gets played forward to Jose Martinez, who gets chased down by Freire and Noah Allen, but he turns around, passes it to Ibrahim Sanusi, who shoots, and it gets deflected off Freire's leg and goes past Drake Callender. Nothing Callender could have done about that. Nothing really Freire could have done about it. Just a tough play, and Inter Miami was sort of pushing so far forward that they were leaving themselves open to this. And Montreal hadn't really tried to break on them very often in this second half, and so you can kind of forgive them for being a little out of position and not ready for it. But yeah, any thoughts on that goal, or is it just sort of one that happens?
Oh, I have a lot of thoughts on this goal, so we're going to delve deeper into this. No. Once we get into the structural side of things, once we talk tactics, that's when I'm going to actually come up with the thoughts on this. But I disagree with you. I don't think this is one of the things that just happens. I saw a couple of things that really was a red flag. And again, transitions. It just seems like Inter Miami is not able to deal with transitions, and we need to sort that out, because we can't keep going on like this for the rest of the season.
Okay, yeah, well, I'm looking forward to hearing those thoughts. Fortunately, unlike last year's Inter Miami team, this year we did turn around and score right away after conceding. Sergio Busquets with a little outside heel pass to Jordi Alba, who has a Lionel Messi type moment and puts in the back of the net with a nice, you know, floater. It's 3-2 at this point. And again, I felt like, you know what? I think Inter Miami has the draw. They have it in them to score again. Any thoughts on that goal and sort of how you felt at that moment in terms of how this game would play out?
Absolute banger of a goal. He connected it really well, right at the sweet spot. And yeah, just brilliantly done. Good ball by Busquets as well. At that point, I definitely thought Inter Miami would not only just draw the game, but maybe even go on to win this, because there was time. There was plenty of time. And I think that was, Suarez had just come on as well, or was about to come on. And I was like, this is the perfect chance for someone off the bench to come and steal the show. So I was very positive at that point before what actually happened.
Yeah. They don't score a third goal. I think the closest that they got, at least in my opinion, was Jordi Alba puts in a nice cross to Leo Campana, and Campana gets kind of caught between going for it with his head and going for it with his foot, and he doesn't really connect on either. That was in the 85th minute, and that was sort of the last real chance that I saw. Of course, there was that Luis Suarez moment where the ball gets deflected off his foot, but I don't think that was a chance in and of itself, but frustrating that we didn't get the corner from there. But yeah, that's sort of, those were the big moments of this game, and it felt like
there was... You missed a major one.
Okay, tell me about it. What did I miss?
The Bojolin 89th minute chance where he...
Oh my God, yes.
I think you've just blocked it out of your mind.
I think it was a bit of a trauma.
I was rewatching the game today.
You're right. I was rewatching the game today, and for extra time, I just got the stopwatch out and I was just clocking, and I just completely forgot to write that moment down. But yes, and that was
it. Was his chance to be the hero? His chance to be the hero.
That is what Schneider Borgelin is, though. He's a guy who, he can hit a header, but he's going to have chances like that, and he's just going to miss. And I like Schneider Borgelin, but for a team that's trying to win games, that's just tough to not get. And he's going to have to start converting on those if he's going to have a real impact on this team this year.
For sure. I think as a job for a substitute is to come off the bench and make an impact, and you get very few chances to do that. And when you do get a chance, you have to take it. So he can't be missing those sitters.
Yeah, you got to put that on target. Okay, we're going to talk a lot about Inter Miami and how they set up and, you know, our thoughts on how the team played. But let's talk for a few minutes about Montreal. I don't think either of us came away particularly impressed with Montreal, at least based on what you've said so far. My first question, and maybe this will kick us off, is who was the best player for Montreal in this game? I spent a lot of time thinking about this today.
I'm trying to remember, and it genuinely feels like Miami shot themselves in the foot and made Montreal look good rather than Montreal having outstanding players. I would say maybe someone like a Kokoro, because he was a bit of a menace on the set pieces. Maybe Lassiter was definitely one who had a few, you know, good box, like good passes into the box. Maybe Chouanier, but nobody stood out as such. So
I don't remember a single play by a single Montreal player that really impressed me in the entire, you know, 90, 100 minutes in this game. Normally when that sort of things happens and you lose, you go to the goalkeeper and you say, okay, well, maybe the goalkeeper was the player of the game by keeping Miami out. But even he let in 4 goals and was sort of lucky to have a couple of them pulled from offside. So I wasn't very impressed with their team and their players.
I hate to do this. I hate to sell a team short, especially when they came out on top and took all 3 points. But
especially on the road.
Yeah, it seemed like it was more Inter Miami losing this game rather than Montreal winning this game, which is a shame again.
Yeah, the one person for Montreal that really did impress me, and this is not the first time this season, but I really was impressed, was Laurent Courtois, their new coach. I like that. I talked about this in the pregame. I like the 3-4-2-1 that he brought over from Columbus. I think he had them really disciplined, really well structured, and he made it difficult for Miami to. They didn't make it difficult, but they were just very disciplined. They were good at time wasting. I mean, they were a well coached team, and that was the big takeaway I took away from this, from Montreal, and my biggest point really.
I actually agree with you, because I feel like it may not have been a case of one player being outstanding, but the team just functioning really well together that might have caught Miami off guard. And that can sometimes be a good thing in itself, you know, when there's no one standout player, but everyone's just done their job and did what they were supposed to. So all in all, I would agree. I think Courtois is a really good coach, and I really like this 3-4-2-1 structure. At some point, I do want Miami to even try it. I like the setup.
That's
and it gives them a few attacking threats. So
the thing about Montreal is, and it, you know, this is from Columbus and their sort of system, but that's a system that you bring a team and build a team into, and that's what Montreal is going to try and do. And they're certainly not there yet. Like we mentioned, I don't think there was a lot of individual talent on that team, but they have a structure that they're going to build into over the course of the next couple of years. And I think it's kind of exciting for Montreal, even if this season you're not going to see a lot of highlight plays. You're going to get a lot of wins like this, where you maybe talent-wise, maybe game flow-wise, you didn't deserve to win or get a result, but you're going to do it anyways because you're well-coached and well-structured. I know you want to talk about Montreal's sort of one strategy in this game early on, which was long balls over the top. So let me give the floor to you and sort of we can talk about that, and maybe that'll lead into our discussion on Miami's deficiencies.
Yeah, this was a weird one because it happened a few times in the first half, like very early. And I think the first goal came off of this, where Montreal was trying to just pop the ball over the top to Caraco. I keep Kokoro. Mispronouncing his name. To Kokoro. And the Miami backline just could not defend it. It was so weird because I've never seen professional players at this level misjudging a ball in the air twice. So once was Christophe, the second time was Callender. And I don't know what the screen is doing. Apologies for that. But yeah, it felt like Miami was playing a really high line. And this was the first time throughout the season, as well as the preseason, where we've seen a team use long balls against us instead of quick transitions and play through the middle. And it felt like we were caught off guard. I don't know if you noticed that or if you had any thoughts on that, but that was concerning. I think if Freire would have been in there instead of Christophe as the central defender in the three, we might have stopped that from happening. But that was just something that, you know, was a red flag for me. And I hope we fix this going forward, because it might be another vulnerability in that defense or in that 3-5-2 structure.
I'm not really worried about it, because yes, one time there was two that really were like not well handled. One, Christophe sort of mistimed it and it went over his head. And the other one, Christophe pulls off because he sees Callander coming for it, and then Callander just whiffs. And so Christophe tries to recover, but I think Christophe would have handled that first one well or fine if Callander doesn't sort of come out for it.
But my point of actually bringing this up was also to discuss the pace in the back line, because I feel like Freire isn't quick. Christophe isn't quick. And I feel like this might be a theme going forward in the season without someone like a Yedlin in the back line anymore. Even if we play a four at the back, it's going to really... it's going to be something that we're going to have to deal with, because we don't have the quickness in our defense to deal with quick, pacey attackers. We saw that against the Galaxy. I think we're going to see that more and more, even in this game, when the ball is over the top, we don't have the pace to catch up with the attacker. So, yeah, it's I think another pacey center back would be something that I'd add to Chrisenderson's list.
I hear you, but it's just not going to happen. Like, this is still MLS. There are only, you know, the kind of center backs you want, there are maybe 20 in the league, and they're the number one center back on their team, and they don't come cheap and they don't come easy. And so you're talking about trying to find someone from South America or whatever. And even then, like, you don't have a lot of roster flexibility to make that happen. So I think we're going to have to get used to this. I don't know if they're going to be able to move Christophe, just because, he'd have to be to like the right team that has their international roster slot, and he would be coming in as their sort of third center back in a back three. So it's going to be hard to find that perfect situation. I think, you know, the right back situation is more desperate, but it's like, I don't want to blame it on their team speed, because, or rather the speed of the defensive line, because it's not going to get better. And so they have to just figure it out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I hear what you're saying, but again, it was twice, and it didn't feel like it was a symptom of a sort of larger issue. Like, but
this would definitely be something that I'm going to keep an eye out for in, you know, the next games, and see how we deal with it going forward.
I think that makes sense. The thing that I am keeping an eye on for is the set pieces. We gave up two goals today, and I made a note of this because this is an issue that we had last season as well, and it was something we didn't really get solved in the off season. At least in this game, we didn't have it solved. But I went back to last year, the fourth game of the regular season in MLS. We played Toronto, and I'm just going to read the 10 outfield players for you real quick, just to give you a sense of who we're dealing with. The starting line was Joseph Martinez, Coco Jean, Nico Stefanelli, Rodolfo Pizarro, Bryce Duke, Jean Mota, Harvey Neville, Sergei Christophe, Chris McVay, and Franco Nigri. I went ahead and looked at it, and that's an average height of 5'9". Aside from McVay, who's 6'4", it was an average height of like 5'7.5". So you can understand why that team was really bad at set pieces. They didn't have any height. They didn't have any physicality. It made sense. But this team, you sign Nico Freire because he's supposed to be good at set pieces. You have Redondo, who's taller. You have Campana in the game, who's, you know, a bigger body. You should be a lot better at this than you are. I mean, Aviles, he has a baby face, but he's also shown he can be pretty physical out there on the field. He sort of just gets bodied off. What is the solution to this? Because it doesn't feel like a personnel problem anymore.
I'm not sure if it was something that was a result of the coaching tactics. I think it felt more like the players switched off and didn't do what they were supposed to. So let's break it down goal by goal.
Real quick, yeah. I just want to add too that this was a problem under Phil Neville. This was a problem under Javier Morales. This was a problem, and this is still a problem under Tata Martino. So I don't know what the answer is. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so like if we break it down goal by goal, the first goal, I think you obviously we pointed out Aviles was to blame on that goal. He got bodied away by his defender, but even the defender had to work a little bit for it. It wasn't like he was completely free in the box. If he was absolutely free with no one marking him, that would have stood out to me. But it felt like Aviles just got bodied, and honestly, don't want to blame it on him too much because that can happen to the best of us. Redondo maybe could have covered him, but again, it just seemed like Aviles was, the inferior player in that case and just got beat by his man.
Yeah, but this is like I hear what you're saying. Every one of these goals you can sort of chalk off to one individual mistake, but it's becoming a consistent problem for this team. And you know, if you look forward, I get that we're worried about a back line that's not as fast, but this feels like the way we're going to lose games to teams that we are much better than is by giving up set piece goals. And it cost us a bunch of games last year, you know, draws and losses. And like what can the coaching staff do? What can the team do to actually to make a difference?
I think one solution is to have someone on the pitch just scream at everyone to make sure everyone's head is right because you need the leaders. And if you think about it, who was the leader when they scored the first goal? Like someone who would organize the back line and organize everyone. Can you think of anybody? Maybe Jordi Alba.
Well, Drake Callender, who
Drake Callender
just
should have
had a
been the
moment.
one.
Yeah, and he just had the moment where he missed it with his head, so his confidence is probably not
Yeah.
probably not
The
in a position to
best.
command there. Yeah.
I feel like, again, harping back on losing Yedlin, I felt like Yedlin might have been someone who would have, organized the back line. But again, you need to just drill it into the players that you have to be switched on. You can't just, lose concentration in these crucial moments because, as you said, that's how you lose a point or three in this case. So that's one aspect of it. Another, I'm not really sure what we can do apart from that because if I did, I would be coaching into Miami. I wouldn't be sitting here commenting. But yeah, it's a weird one. That's something that we need to fix and look into more.
Yeah, and unlike the center backs, where I think it would be very difficult to get a, you know, a really nice pacey center back, this feels like something we can improve on that would drastically improve our season results. I mean, I'm thinking about even just Wednesday night's game. You know, Nashville scoring a goal or two off a set piece feels absolutely in the wheelhouse. It's something they would love. You know, that's their game, is to just defend and hit in transition and be good on set pieces. So, you know, Walker Zimmerman's sort of a specialist on set pieces. I guess, like you, I'm not a coach. I don't know, and you know, I don't coach professionally. I don't know how to solve this problem, but it's something that you got to assume the coaches can, right?
Yeah, you just got to work it on the training ground, honestly. Like, just drill it into the players. Try out different routines. Make sure everyone knows what they're doing. Man marking, zonal marking, something, but just work it on the training ground. Because I feel like this puts unnecessary pressure on the front line as well. Because if your back line's conceding from set pieces, then you essentially need to score. If they score two with set pieces like Montreal did, then your front line needs to score three. Which is putting a lot of pressure on them. Like you can't just nick off 1-0 wins because in the 89th minute, if the other team gets a corner, you're just waiting for disaster to happen. And I can definitely see that as something that would happen against Nashville. So we need to sort
Let's
it out and
stop
sort it
saying,
out soon.
let's stop talking about bad things that could happen versus Nashville, because we're going to put things out into the universe. I don't want to do that. In our last two pregames, I've talked about the player that I'm most worried about on the other team, and that player has scored both times. So I think that we're having a negative impact on how this is playing out. Let's talk about the 3-5-2. It's not great. Our results, you know, in the preseason and in the regular season so far aren't great. We tweeted out that they have given up something like, well, go ahead and I'll bring up the stats.
Controversial opinion. The 3-5-2 looked better than the 4-3-3 in this game. And I say that because by the end of the game, when we were kind of playing that four at the back structure, it wasn't really a structure. Everyone was just pushed so far up that we didn't really have a defensive structure in place. But I think 3-5-2 became steadier and more The players became more comfortable in the 3-5-2 as the game went on. And I'm sure we're going to talk about this, but I think Redondo was a big reason for that. I think he was sitting in, he was playing as the deep line playmaker. And I think he really suited that role because he didn't push too far up. And he stayed slightly in the middle, slightly with the back line. And that kind of prevented the transitions. Because if you think about it, the first half, we didn't have too many transitions on us. We kept the ball well. And whenever Montreal was winning the ball, we won it back immediately. And I think Allen and Redondo worked really well together to ensure that the transitions didn't happen. So I think there was some sort of a discussion about roles in the 3-5-2 setup. And I think we looked a lot more comfortable with Redondo in there. That being said, obviously, we started off a little bit shaky. Again, it took time to settle into it. It's not the best, but I think the 3-5-2 looked better than it has throughout the preseason and throughout the first three games that we've used it. So just a controversial opinion here that I'd love to hear your thoughts on.
Yeah, just before that, some top line stats. We've played 12 games this season, including the preseason. We played six in the 4-3-3 and six in the 3-5-2. In the 3-5-2, we've scored seven and allowed 15 for a -8 goal differential. And in the 4-3-3, we've scored 12 and allowed three. I know that the preseason is, you know, hard to judge, but a -8 goal differential versus a +9 goal differential is certainly something in the same amount of games. I hear what you're saying. The 3-5-2 didn't get exposed in this game, like maybe we saw in previous games, but I think that was because of Montreal. I mean, for large portions of this game, they weren't even trying to get forward. They weren't even trying to attack. I mean, their strikers were just falling, trying to get a foul so the whole team could get forward. But they had no dynamic play for most of this game. And so I don't know if this is a good judge. I hear what you're saying about Redondo, and sort of that's a solid theory. But they just, I didn't think Montreal really tested them in transition, you know, really at all. And so I'm like hesitant to say that it's better. I think one of the things we saw or we've seen is that the problem with the 3-5-2 is those three center backs get too spread out. And so there's too much space in the middle, especially when your middle center back is Kristoff, who's not the fastest. And so those making sure your wing, the wingers on the other team can get forward and then cut in and take advantage of those spaces is exactly how you take advantage of that. And this tactical setup for Montreal wasn't set up to do that. So I don't know if this was really a good test. I agree that they were not tested in the same way, but I don't know if this is like a positive sign moving forward.
But that's the point, right? You want to use the 3-5-2 against teams that don't necessarily have that threat in transition. I wouldn't use it against someone like a Galaxy or maybe even Orlando. I would stick to the 4-3-3. But it just means that maybe the players are getting more comfortable. Maybe there's been some sort of instructions given to them about their specific roles and what they need to do in that 3-5-2. And I think if and when you use it, I'm not a big fan of it at all, as you know. I've been the biggest critic of the 3-5-2 myself. I don't want to see it going forward. But if we need to use it, these are the games where you use it, where you don't have that transition threat from the opposition and where they're not going to exploit that wide channels. And just another point in the 3-5-2, I think it looked offensively a lot better as well, because I think it, with the way Alba was operating, was really helpful. He got in behind a couple of times. One was called off an offside, made a chance for Campana. If we'd seen Ruiz do that on the other side as well, it would have been a lot more threatening. But yeah, I'm just trying to take the positive out of this game.
I don't know. I hear what you're saying. Why do you think it looked better offensively? And I'm not saying it didn't. I'm just saying, like, it's interesting that we didn't have Lionel Messi. We didn't have Luis Suarez for most of this game. Busquets didn't play most of this game. Julian Gressel, I didn't think, had a great game. So why do you think it was that we did look a little
because
bit better?
Because I think we have fewer players who want to play centrally and more players who want to play offensively, more expansive. And I think the main, Lionel Messi was not the outlet in this game, right? Obviously, he wasn't on the pitch. When he's on the pitch, you try to get it into him. So you try to play centrally as much as you can. I think the main outlet in this game was someone like a Jordi Alba on the wings, who would try and then get it into Robert Taylor. I only remember one instance in the first half where we created through the middle, which was the Gressel ball into Robert Taylor, which he, I think, chipped it and hit the post. That was the only central playmaking opportunity that I saw. The rest were all Avilés hitting the ball into Campana, Jordi Alba finding space in behind his wing back and getting in. So I feel like we tried a lot more to play through those channels, and that's probably why we look better offensively rather than play centrally. But again, I'm by no means a tactician, so I'd love to hear your thoughts and see whether you had a similar observation on that.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I don't necessarily disagree. I do want to talk a few bigger picture questions. The first sort of being about the 3-5-2. My thought process is that until we get a new right back, we're going to be stuck in the 3-5-2. Is that what you think? I mean, I know he gave David Ruiz, you know, we talked about David Ruiz getting a chance and maybe he could be a right back. But on a team that's trying to win every game, I don't think Tata's going to do that. Maybe when Ian Frey comes back, he might be a guy that can play right back that Tata will trust back there. But I really get the sense that this is going to be a 3-5-2 until a new right back comes into the team. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah, I agree. I don't think Tata's comfortable playing a 4-3-3 without a traditional right back, which is such a shame because it just goes to show that I don't know why the team management made the Yedlin move at a time when we didn't have a backup already lined up. So it just seems like a stupid move at this point in time. But I don't think Tata's going to play the 4-3-3 without a right back, traditional right back in play.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting because this feels like a team with so much depth. I mean, we have three quality left backs. We have, you know, a number of at least passable center backs. We have a lot of midfielders. We have, you know, at least a couple, you know, two really good strikers. And yet, we have absolutely no one that we feel can play right back, or at least Tata feels that way. And it just feels like Julian Gressel is not going to be that guy, and David Ruiz is probably not going to be that guy. And it doesn't feel like any of the left backs are, you know, they all feel too left-footed to do that. I don't know. I mean, it feels like we're stuck with this for a while. Let's talk about... Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just trying to think what the solution to that is, especially with the national game coming up. But honestly, I'm lost for ideas in this. I think we're stuck with the 3-5-2. We're just going to have to make the most of it.
Yeah, we're playing 3-5-2 in that game, 100%. Oh. Okay, coming back to this game, big picture question. Did we deserve to lose?
No. I think Inter Miami did enough throughout that game to warrant all 3 points, in my opinion. I know that might, you know, piss off some of the Montreal fans, and it might undersell Montreal's performance. They did well. They had a plan in mind. They came in with a tactical plan, and they were able to succeed on that. But I feel like Inter Miami did more than enough to deserve at least a point from that game. We had fair few chances, as one of our listeners mentions. We hit the post twice. We were offside a couple of times. But that was definitely, you know, more drive from Inter Miami to win this game than from Montreal. That's all I'm going to say.
Can I ask you a question? Other than the three goals that Montreal scored, was there another moment where you felt like they were threatening at all?
No. I honestly can't remember. I just can't remember what Montreal did to that game.
Listen, I rewatched it today and I feel the same way. I didn't, even the three chances didn't feel like chances until, you know, the ball was already in the 6-yard box. I mean, it was just tough to lose a game that way. And listen, you're going to lose games like that, especially, you know, with the way that Miami created chances. Robert Taylor had three good chances. Campana had the goal. Borgelin had a big chance. Campana had another chance, and then obviously two offside goals and two balls off the post. It feels like, you know, Taylor Twellman says a lot that, oh, they could have scored 5 or 6 goals today, but it felt like today Miami actually could have scored 4 or 5 goals without needing a lot of luck or you know, clinical finishing. It just
didn't happen. And this is all without Messi. This is all without Messi, which is such a positive sign, but at the same time, it's such a big frustration because if only these players could just finish off their chances. They worked hard. They deserved that win. So I feel like, yeah, it was just a little bit of a letdown towards the end of it.
We'll talk about Messi in a minute, but just one other question. The substitutes in this game, we saw sort of the guys that were getting rest come on in about the 60, 65th minute. And I think those substitutions made sense. Julian Gressel, who I would have liked to see stay on, but I understand him needing to get some minutes off just because of the game on Wednesday. Luis Suarez comes on not too much later, but the big one I want to talk about is Schneider Bjorklund coming on for Robert Taylor. It felt like with Campana and Suarez in the game already, you wanted someone that could lob balls into the box, and Robert Taylor, you know, aside from Jordi Alba, Robert Taylor is probably the best at that, you know, maybe with Sergio Busquets having something to say. But I don't know, what did you make of that change? You now have three strikers on the pitch at the same time. I don't know, what do you think?
Yeah, I was a bit confused by that substitution because I feel like sometimes, or given the preseason, I feel like Tata sees Boatwright more as a right wing. So, sorry, Bjorklund, my bad. But yeah, it was a weird one because it felt like you're just putting on all the offensive players that you have without actually a plan in mind on how to break down Montreal's defense. So, and the risk with that is having three strikers who all want to be in the box and want to take up the same positions, you just clog up the spaces. So yeah, it was a weird one.
I'm okay with that because that's your strategy. But then it felt like after that happened, you had Busquets put a ball in from way too far out and Christophe put a ball in from way too far out. And they weren't actually giving those guys a chance to cluster up and just put balls in. Like, that wasn't the game plan once all three of them were in. So I guess maybe you just need some better communication, but I don't know. I think you want a guy like Julian Gressel or a guy like Robert Taylor to be on the pitch with Jordi Alba so that you can be firing balls in from all over the pitch if you're going to have those three strikers, especially Campana and Bjorklund on the field together. And if you already take two of those guys out, you're sort of losing those good balls in, especially because David Ruiz, who we'll talk more about, I'm sure, isn't a great crosser and he wasn't doing that effectively all game. And so to keep him in when you could have really used a Robert Taylor or a Julian Gressel was, I don't know, it made the Bjorklund move make less sense to me.
Yeah, for sure. I agree with you on that. And just to answer a question by the listeners, I think the point of Bjorklund was the Hail Mary, you know, send him on. Hopefully he can get his head on something. And he did have a chance. He had a chance to score. He could have been a hero of the game, but I think it was more of a Hail Mary move. Have that big, strong presence in the box to try and disrupt Montreal's defense and just hope that he connects with the ball when it comes to him. That was the point. But I agree with you that when you don't have the creative outlets to put the balls in the box for him, what's the point of having that big presence in there? I think at some point during the game, I wanted Boatwright to come on for Ruiz, not like-for-like change, but maybe push Ruiz up a bit into the midfield or more in the attacking position and give Boatwright a run out because I think this would have been the perfect game for him, especially when we decided to switch to the 4-3-3. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. Maybe Tata seeing something that we're not, but yeah.
We saw this conversation about Boatwright a lot on Twitter and, you know, among people talking about Inter Miami, the fans, but I think it's clear by this point that he's not going to come on. I mean, I think holding your breath for Boatwright is a mistake. Tata clearly doesn't feel he's ready. And unlike some of our other young guys like David Ruiz and Sunderland, he didn't really get a chance to prove himself last year that he belonged in the first team. And Tata has never really been known as a guy who brings guys through the academy and into the first team. So I think waiting on Bjorklund to get a start at right back is you're just waiting for something that's not going to happen anytime soon. Okay, big picture question again. This was our first time seeing Inter Miami without Lionel Messi. What were your thoughts?
Very happy with the way the team did 80% of their job without Messi. I think the last 20% was missing. But I think the more the season goes on, I hope they become more comfortable. And I think they're going to look better as a team as they go on without Messi in there. And that's a really positive sign going forward because I think this team can do a job without having hit, you know, the Messi magic in the lineup. I'm just afraid that we're going to miss out on a few there are still holes in this particular team that need to be filled, but I think there's a lot of promise, and we're going to have to deal with Messi's absence in the right way and play to our strengths. And as long as we do that, we know there's enough depth to get some results.
Yeah, I'm going to go back and read that list from last year's fourth game in the MLS. It was Joseph Martinez, Coco Jean, Nico Stefanelli, Pizarro, Bryce Duke, Jean Mota, Harvey Neville, Christophe, Chris McVeigh, and Franco Negri. The talent upgrade in this team from that 11 to this 11 is, it's just absurd. I mean, having guys like Sergio Busquets and Luis Suarez, I mean, even if they start without Messi, then having Campana and David Ruiz coming off the bench is just such a better spot for this team to survive without Messi. And I don't want to take away from Messi, and I don't want to take away, I mean, this is still MLS. Any team that loses their best player is going to get a significant drop off. But this as a first test, I think they did really well. I think they should have won the game. They created lots of chances. You know, Lionel Messi is not going to make them a better team at defending set pieces. So I think they did well. I think Julian Gressel is a guy that's going to be important when Lionel Messi's not here. If we bring in a guy like Matias Rojas, obviously that's going to make a big difference. But I think I'm pretty satisfied with their first game without Messi.
Yeah, what I was most happy about was the fact that all these youngsters, Sunderland, Ruiz, Allen, they all had decent games. Like, there was no point during the game where I was like, okay, he's not ready for this, which is a great sign and a big compliment to them. So, and I think whatever mistakes came actually from some of our more veteran starters like Callender and Christophe. So I think that in itself is a great sign. And don't forget, we've got Yannick Bright coming in as well. You add him into this mix. This is a very promising second string team that we have. And I'm excited for what's going to happen when we don't have Messi, because I think that this team will have a chance to then really show what they can do.
Yeah, I'm thinking about the times where we're not going to have Messi, and really it's just international breaks and the Copa America. And unlike last year, I don't think we're going to have quite as many departures during those international breaks. And so, you know, as long as Luis Suarez isn't called up to Uruguay, which I'm not really sure how in the picture he is for them, but as long as that doesn't happen, I think we're going to be a really great team even without Messi. Okay, let's talk about some individual player performances, and we'll start with our man of the match, and I'll give that to you to start us off. To me, it was pretty obvious, but I guess I want to hear your thoughts.
I mean, yeah, I don't have a choice, right? Jordi Alba, he at one point in the game, he literally held Montreal by the corner and was like, I'm going to score past you no matter what. So great to see. I think you tweeted this out, that it's really good to see that Jordi Alba still has that moment in a game where he just switches on and completely goes a gear above everybody else on the pitch. And I think he's been really consistent despite his age, and his performances have been really good for the first few games that we've seen him in. What a fantastic goal. I've heard there are quite a few good goals this weekend, so I don't know if that's the goal of the weekend, but brilliant volley into the top corner. And I think he was the one who was really putting in every single ounce of his effort to try and win us that game. Unfortunately, we fell short, but I think he deserved to be man of the match there.
Yeah, the moment that keeps coming back to me is in the 85th minute when he does put a cross into Campana, and Campana just can't quite handle it. But that would have been the goal and the assist that tied the game. It wasn't just his talent or his, you know, physically putting in the effort, but mentally too, he was like, he ratcheted up to another level when the team needed him to. I mean, it was maybe we'll talk about Drake Callender in a few minutes, but it was a captain like takeover of the game. He was, you know, getting into it with the refs, trying to get the team going. He was spending a lot of time communicating with Noah Allen to make sure he was in the right position, because Jordi Alba was sort of drifting into the midfield, drifting to the other side to try and create. And he made sure that Noah Allen was taking care of his responsibilities on the left side. Let's talk about that, you know, the fact that he was a free roamer and not just that left back that's getting down the byline and crossing it in, but he was sort of the team's primary playmaker.
Yeah, I think that was more to do with Montreal than the actual setup. I think Montreal didn't have that threat down the wing. So that gave Jordi Alba the freedom to just push into the midfield and take the ball and dictate the play. I think what goes under the radar is the fact that we have Messi, Suarez, and Busquets, who are much bigger names than Jordi Alba. Not much bigger, but bigger names than Jordi Alba, or at least bigger attractions than Jordi Alba. He just got under the radar in terms of what his performances have been. Even when he wasn't taking the game by the scruff of its neck, and even in the first half, he was getting the freedom to find the spaces. His passes were fantastic. Some of the play that he was making was, you know, he was our biggest threat offensively, even in the first half. So I think that's just a testament to the fantastic player that he is. And that's another option against teams that don't necessarily threaten from the wings and don't have the players to run down the channels, where Alba doesn't need to do a defensive job. He can just push into that midfield. And maybe that's a solution to stop those transitions. Have him be the sort of a DM role. Have Busquets maybe a little bit further up from him. And just allow him to be that deep line playmaker. So maybe something for Tata to think about.
Yeah, it's easy to forget how great Jordi Alba is individually, because it has so often come with Messi or with the Barcelona boys as a trio. But he's the best player on like half the teams in the league. He's so good. And the fact that we get him for a not DP roster charge is just amazing, honestly. Okay, let's move on to our second award. And maybe you should kick us off with that.
No, I think I've always been the one to go first in the heron that flew north. So I'm going to give you this one first and then see if my player matches that.
Yes, I think that's probably only fair. The Heron That Flew North award is our award for the player that's doing the wrong thing. Florida Herons, they don't go anywhere during the winter, so they definitely don't go north. And today, I think that has to go to Drake Callender. He has a mistake where he lets the ball get over his head and he forces Sergei Kristoff to have a tremendous defensive play. That looked like it rattled his confidence for the next couple minutes and probably even for the rest of the first half and maybe even for the rest of the game, because we saw in the second goal that he comes out for a ball and doesn't get it, which is, I think, a confidence thing for him. Drake Callender's a great goalkeeper. I think he's the best American goalkeeper in MLS. I think he's, you know, a top three goalkeeper of anywhere for America, but not his best game today. Although I will say he still, even with a bad game, had a nice save or two.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think two of the goals could potentially be blamed on Callender. And I think if he hadn't made those mistakes, we probably would have come away with that win, which is unfortunate because he's been our top performer along with Suarez and Messi in the last few games. So unfortunate to see him have those errors. I agree. I think unquestioned number one still. I think he's a fantastic goalkeeper. But what's stopping him from going up to that, you know, absolute class level is these small mistakes that he sometimes has. I think if he takes away those from his game, he will be an absolutely fantastic player. And I could see him as, you know, maybe the second goalkeeper, eventually the number one goalkeeper for the US men's national team as well. Of course, that's a debate for another time, but I think he has that in him. He just needs to get away with these errors and push on from his amazing performances that he's put in for us.
Drake has always been an athlete and a good one. And so he always has that ability to make those really impressive saves and game-saving saves. And I think over the last three seasons, we've seen him take a step forward every year and he's gotten better. And so this year, the thing I really wanted to see from him was consistency in not making those types of errors. And so not the best start, but obviously it's just one game and we'll hope he improves. We don't want to crash on him too much. The only other thing I wanted to mention was that he was the captain for this game. Do you think that played into it at all?
Ooh, good point, actually. It could have, because I think the kind of goals that we conceded demanded some sort of leadership in the ground to organize your defense, to organize, you know, the structure of the team. As a goalkeeper, you have to do that anyways. But I don't know, man. He has been captain before, right? He has had the armband before.
Once or twice.
Yeah, once or twice. So maybe that plays into the psychology of it. But I don't know. I think it was more the fact that he misjudged that first header that went over him. And then from there on, it just kind of went downhill and his confidence just dropped. And I just want to say, I think the goalkeeper position is one of the most scrutinized positions in football. So I don't want to dwell too much on him. I think he's going to come good for us in the next game. And hopefully, you know, he can put this behind us. He should put this behind him.
Yeah, as much as neither of us are professional coaches, we're certainly not professional goalkeeping coaches. So yeah. I agree. Other than the obvious, I don't know how helpful we'll be when critiquing goalkeeping. Okay, let's move on to our awards. This is two awards for each of us. We sort of make them up as we go in terms of what they're called. And because I went first for The Heron That Flew North, I want to hear your first award of tonight's episode.
Yeah, I'm going to keep this one really simple. I'm going to call this the Under the Radar Award. And I'd like to hear your thoughts on who you thought deserves the Under the Radar Award.
I'm looking at the team sheet, and I have no idea who you're talking about. I'm going to go with Federico Redondo.
I would consider him definitely as the second pick for that particular award. But I wanted to take this opportunity to talk about Noah Allen. I think I really liked... Yeah, Sunderland's another good shout. Sorry, I'm just reading the comments by one of our listeners. Sunderland's another good shout, but I think Noah Allen... In the first half especially, I really liked the role that he was doing. He was pushing up from... So he was one of the defenders from the back three who was actually pushing up and stopping Montreal from making any progress in the final third. He had some really good tackles towards the end. I think his overall score was around 6.8, which I think is very underrated. That's why I gave him this award. I think... He had some really good tackles. He was working well with Redondo to try and stop Montreal's attacking play. And I think he was one of the reasons that I think the back three looked good. He had a good game, according to me. I'm not sure if you saw the same.
Yeah, I think Noah Allen is going to be such a unique and talented and good player in 24 months because he's going to have spent all this game time at this level playing as a wingback, playing as a center back in a back three, playing as a center back in a back two, playing as a fullback. He's going to be such a dynamic player with lots of experience defensively and this sort of talent and attitude to get forward. I hear what you're saying, and I'm really excited about Allen's future. I mean, he's going to be a really interesting and unique player for the MLS just because of his development under these circumstances. So I think that is a great shout. And yeah, he wasn't someone I pegged for an award. So I think that's a good shout.
I think just in terms of statistics, he had 68 out of 69 passes. I know that's not a lot of passes, but that's like a 99% pass accuracy for a left center back, which is great. He had, I think, 7 ground duels, of which he won 3. And he was just being disruptive, and I like that. And I agree, he's a really good left center back. And for this 3-5-2 to work, I think he's going to be a very important piece going forward.
Okay, my first award is called the This Is Why You're Here Award.
Ooh.
Any guesses?
I want to give this to Federico Redondo.
Also, no.
Oh, damn.
This one goes to Julian Gressel.
Mm-hmm.
He had one really nice pass, an through ball to Robert Taylor that Taylor tried to chip over the goalkeeper, and it wasn't an op. It didn't end up becoming a goal. But other than that, I thought he was kind of invisible in this game. He didn't have a lot of incisive moments. He was a guy that I thought this team was going to really rely on him going forward when Messi wasn't on the field. And you know, Busquets and Suarez also not on the field. I thought he was going to be the guy that this team relied on to create offense, and it didn't really turn out to be that way. And so maybe I have that wrong. Maybe that's not why Tata thought he was going to be this great addition. But I don't know. What did you think of his performance today?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think there were times in that game where I was asking where Gressel actually is. Like, I don't think he hasn't shown the ability to take the game by the scruff of its neck. And I think there will be instances where we need him to do that. I think the fact that Alba was doing it and not Gressel is a big sign. I do think he's got the ability to create chances. And I'm looking at his stats and he's only had one key pass, which is not enough. In Messi's absence, I think he needs to fulfill that role. I understand when he's playing in the midfield with Gomez and Busquets, he might have to do a little bit more of the dirty work of running and, you know, getting the ball back. But when he's playing in the absence of Messi, I think he needs to be the one who gets in the ball more. And I'd like to see more from him going forward. I think he's shown the capability to put in a really good pass, as we saw with the pass for Robert Taylor, as well as in the previous games, he's had some really good crosses into the box, but I think he just doesn't do enough of those. So I'm hoping he can move on from that and, you know, whatever mental block is stopping him from doing that, or maybe even Tata seeing him in that position or not, we have to see going forward. But I think he can fulfill that role, and I agree. This is why he's here. He needs to be that playmaker in the absence of Messi.
I want to give him a little bit of slack because he came off for the, you know, the last 20 minutes or of the game were really when we were just attacking and putting balls in, and he was not on the field at that point. But I think that kind of goes to my point where it was the first half where I was looking for Julian Gressel to get the ball and to dictate play and to be a playmaker. And it never really happened until that one opportunity late. And so I was disappointed with that, but I guess we'll move on. What's your second award?
Ooh, I'm trying to think of a good name for this award, but I would want to call this like father, like son award. This could mean a few things to you. I'd like to see how you interpret this, but who do you think this goes to?
I think it goes to Federico Redondo.
Yeah. I think I made it too easy for you, but
I think so.
Yeah, I think he's definitely worth a discussion. I saw some really good things from him in this game. And I'd like to hear your thoughts before I talk about Redondo, because I've already given a glimpse of what my idea was. I'd like to hear what you think, how you think his game went.
I am really interested to see how he performs as a holding midfielder. And I think it was hard to tell in this game because didn't get challenged a lot in transition. There wasn't a huge need for a holding midfielder. This was something I watched a little closer on the rewatch, and they weren't challenged very often. So I don't think I learned a lot from him defensively. He is picking up the pace of the game, which I like. He was more incisive with his passing today. He had quite a few mistakes in that first game against Nashville where he just turned the ball over. He made a pass to sort of no one, and he cleaned that up today. It was his second game. And listen, I think this is what we saw today is the player he is. And so I don't know how helpful that was because he needs to become someone better or different in order to fit with Sergio Busquets and in that midfield. And so I think he played fine today. I think he played well. He had some really nice passes, but I don't think we learned a lot that we're going to be able to take forward.
I wouldn't disagree with it, but I would caveat some things that you mentioned. So I think he had a good game, especially in that first half. I think the second half of that first half, I think he played really well. He was the metronome that was keeping the game moving. He took responsibility, which is great. For a new player, you want to see that. You want to see them making themselves available for the ball. Because a lot of the times what happens is a new player coming into a new team is slightly hesitant to make mistakes, don't necessarily ask for the ball. So the fact that he was asking for the ball shows me that he has the confidence to dictate the play. I think he had some really good line-breaking passes. A couple of passes that he played allowed us to get forward. He's distributing the ball well. As a deep-lying playmaker, I don't think he's responsible for making those key passes, but he's responsible for the offensive transition from the defense to the midfield. Having Messi in with him is going to be really interesting to see if, you know, that changes anything in Redondo's game. I agree with you and your point that you made earlier when we were about to sign him. He doesn't look athletically as robust as people have made him out to be.
He had a nice run where he looked
He
really
had a nice
fast,
run, yeah.
but it's sort of like he's the kind of athlete that has long legs and he can get moving once he's going, but it's that
Yeah.
short area
He's
burst
not
and quickness
dynamic.
and
He's not quick.
responsiveness.
Yeah. I think he's a bit clunky when he runs. But again, I think as he puts on a bit of muscle, grows into the league, he's going to be good.
And
Here's
listen,
a.
that's
Sorry, go
not a
on.
deal breaker. It's just
Yeah.
that as you go into a more athletic league, you have to adjust to that and learn how to play. And it's just about being smarter and
Yeah, for
adjusting.
sure. For sure. I think I saw glimpses of him, which if he builds on, I think he's going to be a very promising player for Miami. Here's a question, though. I think he's going to be better playing by himself than playing with Busquets. But I'd like to hear your thoughts on this. Do you think that might be the case?
This is sort of attached to a point I wanted to make before we moved on from him, is that we paid $8.5 million for this guy. This is how much people, other teams are paying for their superstar striker, superstar number 10. I mean, this is like a star. This guy is being brought in to be a star, not just a good player, not just a role player, not just a off the bench guy, but not just an under 22. He's coming in to be a star. I mean, we paid 3.5 times as much for Redondo as we did for Diego Gomez. This is like, we saw Joseph Paintsill for the Galaxy, was really dynamic, a really fun attacker, a guy that we think is really going to transform their team. Galaxy signed him for $9 million, and we signed Redondo for 8.5, and Redondo isn't a goal scorer. So in theory, Redondo should be even better, right? So every time I talk about him, I want it to be in that context where he's supposed to be a star. And it doesn't, so like, we talk about how he's dictating the game and everything. And yes, he has to do that when Busquets is not there. Is his best, would he be at his best when Busquets is not in the midfield with him? Maybe, but it doesn't matter because those two are your stars. They have to figure it out. So that's why I'm saying, like, I think he played fine. I think he played well in this game, but I don't know how much I learned that's going to be useful going forward because it wasn't with Busquets. It wasn't, against those
With
really
Messi.
dangerous, really high quality teams. Montreal, I don't think we think is a great team. And so I don't know. I guess I didn't learn that much about him today.
And let's be honest, it's just his second game. We're not putting any pressure on him. I think he definitely has room to improve and grow into this team.
And let me add that, well, Sorb is gone, that this is a player that, if we're comparing him to Kramaski or Diego Gomez, yes, he's good. He really stands up to them. But when we're talking about a guy that's supposed to be one of the best players in the league, we need to see more, especially from the midfield. We're only doing four awards today, but I think we're going to have to add more because there's so many players to talk about. And well, yeah, anything else now that we have Sorback back? Anything else you want to mention about Redondo before we move on to the next award?
I think we're ready to move on to the next award.
Okay, I still haven't come up with a name for it, and that is absolutely my fault. The problem is I have about four players that I can't decide who deserves it. I'm going to give, so I break the silence. I'm going to give a, this was better than the numbers award.
See, now
No,
I would have given
this,
that to
no.
Haaland.
This was better than the chatter award.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. I'm trying to think. I don't want to give that to Campana. Maybe Sunderland. Okay, I'm gonna give that to Sunderland. Lawson Sunderland.
No, it goes to Campana.
Oh.
I saw some people talk about Campana not having a good game, not really making a mark on the, this was his opportunity to start and he didn't really make a mark in this game. And I disagree. He had a goal. He had another goal that was offsides from Robert Taylor, but he finished it well, and there was nothing he did wrong. He had an assist to Jordi Alba that also got called off because of an offside. So you're talking about a guy that put, you know, 2 to 3 real good chances together that should have been or could have been goals in another world. And he only gets one, but it was a game-tying goal. It was an important one. And I also thought he had really good chemistry with Robert Taylor up front. He can hold the ball up. He can play those little flick balls over the defender. He had one to Robert Taylor in the first half. He had one to Luis Suarez in the second half. So this is a player that for a backup in this league, he's really good.
And you have to remember, this is his first game starting. So he's definitely going to be rusty. He hasn't had that many game minutes, full match game minutes in his legs. So in that sense, I completely agree with you. I don't know. I didn't personally read any chatter about him not having a good game. My personal thought was I thought he did exactly what we expected him to do. He scored that one goal. He made good chances. He linked up really well. And I think him and Robert Taylor complemented each other quite well, because Robert Taylor was a runner and he was a little bit of a target man and the one who was sometimes laying the ball off for him. So I think Campana did really well throughout that game. And I was excited to see him and Suarez playing together as well, because I thought there was a bit of a chemistry there, which I'd love to see get explored more and more as the season moves forward and maybe even see a 4-4-2 going forward. So I thought there was a lot of good stuff there. And yeah, I completely disagree with people who said that he didn't have a great game.
You know what I find so interesting is that people talk about this team without Lionel Messi and does it have the depth and all that stuff. But I mean, for an MLS team to have players of this quality coming off the bench that you think deserve to be starters, or you're trying to find a formation so that they can fit into the starting lineup. And, you know, we've seen Robert Taylor also come off the bench. Like, this is a really deep team for this league. This is a team that has extraordinary talent coming off the bench, and especially when everyone gets healthy and you can add Franco Negri and Kramaski and Ian Frey to that mix. It's really exciting, man.
No, I think people forget that there are a lot of injuries that this team's dealing with, and you mentioned a few names there. Once those players are back, we have a lot of options coming off the bench. So,
but even still, you know, Lawson Sunderland, I think maybe would be, if you ranked the starting lineup, he would probably be 11. But every other guy, I think, is clearly startable or is like a quality starter. And then that doesn't include your bench options, which were Sergio Busquets, Luis Suarez, Diego Gomez. So, Campana, getting back to Campana, I think he played really well. Obviously, he's not Luis Suarez, and you know Suarez is going to start on Wednesday, but I think Campana had a good game, and I did see some chatter that he wasn't as good as maybe I thought he was. Okay, those are our four awards for tonight, but this was an interesting game, and I think there's, maybe this is going to happen a lot when we rotate, but I think there's a couple other players that we should touch on a little bit. Toto Aviles, I just wanted to mention, he had a bad play defensively, but he had two really, really nice crosses, one to Jordi Alba down the left side, and then one to Robert Taylor, which was Robert Taylor's header. I don't know if you want to say anything about him, but David Ruiz, Lawson Sunderland, Christoph, Nicolas Freire, I think there's, you know, some things to touch on for all of them.
No, for sure. I think Aviles had some really... Yeah, Aviles had a good game, apart from that one mistake that led to the goal. I think it was Aviles and Freire who stopped Jose Martinez's run, right? When the third goal came in. I think it was, or was it Allen and Freire? I'm not sure.
No, it was Allen and Freire.
Apart from that one big mistake, which essentially cost us the game, I think Aviles was good. He's always been great. I haven't seen cause for concern with him. Whenever I talk about defensive vulnerabilities for this team, Aviles is usually not the one that I am pointing out. He's always been dependable. And listen, he's played so many minutes already. I think he's played every single game so far. So I hope at some point in the near future he gets a rest. But I think he's one of the bright sparks in that defense. And let's hope he doesn't get beat by his man again for the rest of the season.
Nicolas Freire, he came on. He was supposed to be a set-piece specialist. We concede a set-piece goal almost immediately after he comes on. Not that that was his fault on the goal, but he was the guy who made the foul that set up that, you know, led to that set piece. He also, on Montreal's third goal, he's sort of standing in front of Sanusi when he shoots, and it deflects off his leg and gets redirected towards goal. So Callander didn't really have a chance on that one. I almost gave him the bad luck award, or, you know, something along those lines, because he sort of was in the wrong place at the wrong time. But anything else that from this game you want to say?
No, I don't think Ferre is to blame for the two goals. I do want to come back to that third goal, because I said we're going to talk more about it tactically, but I'm going to spend 30 seconds on it. I think that third goal was really concerning because it, again, went back to the same issues in transition. As soon as we lost the ball to Montreal, they had two passes that they had to make, and then they were through. Regardless, I think Avilés and Freire had a really good recovery where they stopped Martinez from having a clear-cut chance on goal. It was the midfield that I was screaming to get into position, because Sanusi essentially ran from the halfway line to the edge of the box and just ran onto the ball and just scored it without any pressure from anybody around him. And I was looking at Sergio Busquets, who was jogging while Sanusi just ran past him. And that's something that can't happen. Whether it's Busquets, whether it's someone else in the midfield, they need to be tracking that run. And it was, I think that was the most awful goal that we conceded off the three. And that should have been absolutely avoidable.
Yeah,
especially when your defense is doing so much work. Sorry.
Yeah, the only reason it doesn't bother me quite as much is just because of the game scenario. If that had happened in the sixth minute, I would have been right there with you. It's just that they were down a goal at that point. They were putting numbers forward. And so, yes, I hear what you're saying, but Busquets is not going to chase down Sanusi anyways. I hear what you're saying. Like, structurally, you want someone to at least challenge him to make it tough, but I don't know. It just doesn't bother me as much.
I also think that wouldn't have happened if Redondo was on the field, because I think...
And listen, that may have been the moment that we would have seen on Redondo, right? That would have been a really interesting to learn, because
I agree with you. Maybe that's why he didn't... Like, again, there's a lot of ifs and buts, but my understanding of that play was that maybe that didn't happen while Redondo was on play, because he didn't let that happen. But again, we don't know what came first, the chicken or the egg, but I think we're going to have to see a bigger sample size to judge that. So
yeah, and Sanusi,
something to look forward to.
Sanusi is like their athletic runner kind of type player, and he came on, you know, fresh. He came on in like the 70th minute. So I think he came on after Redondo had already come off. So, you know,
we'll see.
Let's talk about David Ruiz at right wing back. He also could have been an award, a guy we, you know, mentioned.
Actually had an award for him. I had the square peg in a round hole award. I think he was misutilized in that particular position. I felt maybe Gressel might have been served better in that position and have Ruiz in, because I think, given his offensive output and the offensive mindedness of Ruiz, I would have expected him to go more forward, but I think he was staying back while Alba was the one attacking. So I'm not sure whether that was the right dynamic, whether that was the right balance or not, but not to blame him. I think it was just he had to cover in a position that he wasn't necessarily comfortable in. He wasn't bad, but he wasn't great either.
Yeah, I mentioned this earlier in the podcast, but it feels like, you know, if he's on Montreal, they can just give him the next 15 games to get comfortable at that position. And it's okay. Like, he's going to make mistakes. He's not going to be great, but he's going to grow into it with time. And it just doesn't feel like this team is going to give him that time with the goals and ambitions that we have. And so, yeah, I agree. I noticed in the second half, I thought every time the ball went to him wide, it just felt like the play was going to die unless he put it back to the middle, because he didn't have any crosses that were impressive. He didn't really, like, you know, we talk about him having final third product. We talk about him having some offensive instincts, but I sort of realized in this game that it's not final third product. It's inside the box product. He's a guy that if you get him the ball inside the box, you can put a nice shot on Cole. And he's a guy that I think can run out of the midfield while the defense is distracted with some of the other attacking players Inter Miami has, and he can find good spots in the box to be dangerous. But from a right wing perspective, you know, from the wing perspective, from the outside, I don't think he offers a lot offensively. And so, I don't know. That was my thoughts. And again, he's a guy that needs 15, 20 games out there to get comfortable, and he's not going to get that.
I agree.
Lawson Sunderland, and I think he's the last player that I want to mention. He got the start in the midfield instead of David Ruiz. He did get the assist, which was nice, but I saw a lot of people praising him. I thought he was only okay. What were your thoughts?
I agree with you. I don't think, again, he didn't put any foot wrong there throughout that game. Like, there wasn't a moment where I was like, oh, why is he in this position? Or he's messing up. I think he was just steady. He was okay. Not standout, not amazing. Didn't have a, bright spark moment where I was like, oh, wow, this is amazing. I think he took up some good positions. He made himself available when necessary, but I feel like his offensive output could have been a little bit more. Obviously, he had that assist, but other than that, I didn't necessarily see a moment from him throughout the game where I thought he was really impacting the result in any way. So I think he had a decent game, but nothing more than that.
Yeah, Inter Miami now has this sort of glut of young, talented midfielders. Redondo, Kramaski, David Ruiz, Diego Gomez, even Yannick Bright, and Sunderland. And in my opinion, Sunderland, while I think he's a nice player, I think he's definitely an MLS caliber player. I think he, belongs in the league. I think he's sixth on that list in terms of how I would rank them. And so, maybe that's too soon to put him up ahead of Yannick Bright. And the other thing to note with him is that he's older than a lot of these other homegrowns. He isn't a homegrown. He didn't come through the Miami Academy as a teenager. We sort of signed him out of a club from Spain. And so he's more in line in age-wise with Campana and Redondo than he is with Kramaski and David Ruiz. So, those guys, I think, I like them a little bit better in terms of what their potential is and what they can do on the field right now. So just something to keep in mind. Obviously, David Ruiz was playing wide, so there wasn't really another option, but he's fine to play, but I think we should make a note of that because he got a lot of plaudits for the assist, but overall, I wasn't in love with the game. Okay, that was the last player I wanted to talk about. Is there anything else from you before we wrap up this game?
No, I think we've covered plenty.
Yeah, I do too.
Time to put this game behind us.
It's been about 87 minutes. So the last thing I want to mention before we go, not related to this game, but we tried this for the first time on Sunday before the game. We did a pre-game preview in the hour before kickoff. We've been feeling like, or at least I've been feeling like, as soon as the lineups come out, I'm ready for Inter Miami to play. I'm excited. I want to be an Inter Miami fan. And there's still an hour between sort of that happening and the game actually starting. And it doesn't feel like there's any way for me to get my Inter Miami fix. And so me and Sorf talked about doing our pregame preview in the hour before the game. And so I just want to invite everyone that listens to this podcast to come, because if you feel the same way, if you feel like in the hour before kickoff, you want to, be an Inter Miami fan and not be doing other things in life, and you want to get into it and you want it to, just have it all be about Inter Miami for the next couple hours, come join us on YouTube. We're going to put a live show in the hour before kickoff for Wednesday night, and we hope you join us.
And it's a big game as well, so it can be a season-defining game against Nashville. So please,
yes,
join us. Yeah. And
I think it's going to be a good way to get those nerves going, so you don't have to just sit there, twiddling your thumbs. So yeah, definitely join us. And for Sore, my name's Scotty, and that was our post-game show for the Montreal game. We hope you have a wonderful day, and good night.